You're listening to the City Gospel Movement's podcast, where we celebrate and accelerate collaborative gospel work in cities around the world.
We believe God is already at work in your city. We're here to help you ask, what is God doing where I live, and how can I join in?
If you love your city, love the church, and believe God can do amazing things in your city, you're in the right place.
Let's get started.
Even though it might be hard or it requires extreme sacrifice, there's not a better feeling that you're ever gonna feel than doing and being in the place that God wants you to be.
Hey, CGM family. We are so excited you're listening to this podcast, and I just want to remind you to subscribe. That is the best way that you can get in touch with the resources. And also, podcasts don't expand naturally on their own. It really is a team effort. And so would you do a big favor and work with us in spreading the word about this podcast? You can review. It takes like 60 seconds, and also subscribe. And now I'm going to introduce you to Caden House, who is the communications master, and she is going to let you know how to stay in touch with us.
Yes, thanks, Lizzie. We love hearing from our listeners, and one way that you can reach us is through our City Gospel Movement's Instagram. So please, please DM us at City Gospel Movements.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the City Gospel Movement podcast. Our hope with this and desire with this podcast is to inspire you with what is possible when it comes to collaborative gospel work in cities. Today's guest will hopefully do just that. You are going to hear the story of Bob Dalton, CEO and founder of Sackcloth and Ashes, now a successful company with an incredible purpose. Bob has a saying that sometimes the right thing isn't the logical thing, and that we might have to dabble in the crazy to make an impact in this world. As a city movement leader, I know you know this, so you are going to love this story. Bob, welcome to the podcast today.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
This is going to be a really fun conversation, everybody. So Bob, let's go back to 2014. You were unemployed, having finished work for a nonprofit, and sitting in your car wondering what was next. Bring us all into that car with you.
Yeah, we definitely have all had moments where we are sitting in a non-moving car and having one of those, what is the meaning of life moments. And I was having one of those moments, and it was due to kind of all of the kind of walls coming in all at the same time and feeling the pressure of life. And about 6 months prior to me sitting in the car, my mom had gone through a pretty difficult season where she had lost a couple family members, and she ended up calling me and just saying, hey, I want to start my life over. And she kind of needed to escape some things that she kind of had fallen into just due to depression and not having the ability to cope in a healthy way. And so she called me up and she's like, I'm going to move across the United States and start my life over. And you know, my first thought was, yeah, like, yeah, right, mom, like, whatever. And then she ended up calling me up 3 days later. And she's like, I sold everything I have left on Craigslist. And I booked a one-way plane ticket from Oregon to Florida. And I was like, wow, courageous move. And she flies over there and she thinks her aunt's going to take her in. And her aunt doesn't take her in. So she ends up sleeping on beaches and benches. And that completely was just unexpected. Like, it was just not something that was planned. It was not something that she thought she'd find herself in a situation like that. And there's not really much I could have done to help. And every time I did try to help, she kind of just said, like, I'm on my own journey. So it put me in a really difficult situation. And the irony was, I was always passionate about helping social issues, but homelessness was never on the list. I was actually the guy that would drive by people on the street and whisper under my breath, go get a job. Mm-hmm. And so here I am, the guy that used to judge people on the street. My mom's going through this difficult time, and her journey inspired me to call my local homeless shelters and ask what they needed. And they all said blankets. So I came up with the idea that for every blanket somebody purchases, we'll donate a blanket to that person's local homeless shelter. And I shared this idea with some people and they were stoked about it. And I did what most people do when they have a really good idea. I did nothing about it. And
how many of us can say that, right?
Yeah, we had a really, I was an inspiring entrepreneur. So I found myself sitting in my car and my mom's going through this difficult time. I have this idea that everybody's telling me to start and I'm not starting it. And I'm applying for jobs and nobody's getting back to me. And I'm finding myself sitting in my car. And, you know, Shel Silverstein has this poem called Fear. And I think it's one of the most beautiful poems. It's in depicting fear. And he says, Barnabas Browning was so scared of drowning that he never would swim or get in a boat or take a bath or cross a moat. He would sit in his room with the door locked tight, shaking with fear that a wave might appear. And he cried so many tears that it filled the room and he drowned. And it's this beautiful like illustration that it's not the things that we fear that kill us, it's fear itself. And so I'm sitting there in my car and my car is filling up with tears.
Yeah.
And ironically, I look up, my seat's leaning back all the way and my knees are up on my steering wheel. And on my knee, there's a coffee cup. And on the coffee sleeve, it says, what are you waiting for? And it was like all these things I had
been questioning. It's a
sign. Yeah, all these things I was fearful of doing. And I look up and my first thought was like, what the heck? Coffee company puts quotes on their sleeves. And my next thought was, I'm going to do this. I'm going to pursue this whole blanket idea. And I started my car and drove straight down to Joann's Fabric and bought a sewing machine and roll of fabric, because that's what you do when you're starting a blanket company. I bought this beautiful, like, couple hundred dollar Singer sewing machine, and I bring it home and I pack it into my house. And my wife and her friend were watching TV, and my wife kind of sits up on the couch and she sees me like holding this giant roll of fabric and a sewing machine, and she's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, girls, I'm starting a blanket company. And my wife's like, you're doing what? And I realized really quick, I can't sew. And so my only business strategy was I need to get really high quality photography. And I hustled up and down the Oregon coast, which is where I was living at the time. And I got into 20 shops out of about 200. Which really set the precedent of what entrepreneurship was about. Like, one out of every 10 things ends up working out. I get into 20 shops and I had great photography. And on June 1st, 2014, sackclothandashes.com went live. And so that moment in the car was just, it was the turning point for me. It was my now moment.
So I think that's such a awesome representation for so many of us. I mean, I would venture to guess that almost every single person has an idea that they don't pursue. What was it, do you think, in that moment that you just said, I can't not do this time?
I think it was just the bizarreness of the whole coffee cup. Like, what are you waiting for? Like, the question, what are you waiting for, is just staring me at right in the face. And it made me quickly analyze, like, what am I waiting for? Like, if that's the case, I'm like, I'm going to be waiting a long time with all the excuses that I could come up with, you know? And I think it was just kind of like, I didn't have any other options. That was also part of the reason was, it wasn't like I had like three options to choose from and then I chose the crazy entrepreneur path. I didn't really have any options. And then the only option was like to drive down to Joann's Fabric and bootstrap a blanket company.
Yeah. So the couple hundred dollars for the sewing machine and fabric was the best option on the table.
That was the only option on the table. So so that was really the bizarreness. And I think I've always been kind of a person to like look for the bizarre opportunities and try to capitalize on them as well. I think that that was kind of part of it probably too, was I like doing crazy things that don't make sense and then see if I can get them to work. And in that sense, I was kind of losing my mind during that time period, you know, with all the pressures and, you know, everything going on. And then there was just like this bizarre opportunity that I'm like, you know what, I'm going to do this.
Yeah. So let's talk about that, because I really do love this saying that you have about sometimes the right thing isn't the logical thing, and that we might have to dabble in the crazy. As you can imagine, maybe what your wife was thinking when you walked in the door, she was probably thinking, this is crazy, right? Mm-hmm. So kind of expand on that, that thinking that you share about sometimes the right thing isn't always the logical thing.
I mean, most of the time, logically, we talk ourselves out of a lot. And I think it's rare that people really tap into like doing what they feel like they're supposed to do. Our minds typically get in the way of the things that sometimes we feel like we're supposed to do, but they don't make sense logically. Mm-hmm. I think that's how a lot of beautiful things get created. I think that's like the almost the process of art, or the process of any beautiful thing happening. You know, it's your mind has to really get out of the way. I think, you know, if we don't allow there to be room for just acting on intuition and acting on feeling, you know, and it's tough. It's interesting because in the business world, it's all logical. You know, everyone's trying to make logical decisions all the time. Like, you know, the feeling part of it, the emotion part of it, that's for the artists. That's for the people that are not in business. And so the irony was like, I had these two worlds like colliding together, which like, logically, there is probably a lot of things that I could be doing better, but I was also acting on this like gut feeling of like, I feel like I'm supposed to do this.
So let's talk about that gut feeling a little bit. How had your faith kind of integrated into this kind of that aha moment in the car? And then maybe just talk a little bit about where you were at with kind of going, okay, God, is this what I'm supposed to be doing?
Yeah. So I always had felt like I wanted to make a difference in the world or do something where I wanted to be a part of a movement. And I don't know where that desire came from, but I had felt that since like 18, 19 years old. Like I want to be a part of.
I would say that this is something that is for our people who are listening to this podcast is probably in most of them, that there is mm-hmm. something that feels like, I think I'm supposed to be part of something bigger than what I'm experiencing right now.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to be a part of a movement. I was always fascinated by movement. I was less fascinated by tradition, which, you know, traditions are great. But the interesting about traditions is like traditions are movements that have died. And mm-hmm. that's what makes them traditions. And so I wanted to be a part of something like right now, something alive, something moving, something happening. And I wanted to make a difference in our communities. And I feel like I sat in a lot of church services that kind of finished their sermons with, who wants to make a difference? You know, and everybody raises their hand, and then it's like everyone's looking at each other like, what do we do? Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And I sat in a lot of those type of communities where I was like, you know, found myself complaining a lot, but then I was like, well, maybe I'm just supposed to be this person that starts these experiences and giving people opportunity to do something in our local communities. And so that's kind of where I'd always felt like I wanted to make a difference. Well, if you want to make a difference, you don't run headfirst into the business world. You know, my thought was, okay, I got two options. I could go to start a church or I could go start a nonprofit. But starting a business was not on the plate, you know, of like, I want to make a difference, so I'm going to go start a business. Like, that wasn't even an option. And so the irony was God ended up using a business as the vehicle of me being able to participate in movement and make a difference. And I think that all my desires and all the times that I prepared to give messages or sermons or the ways that I participated in nonprofits and got to learn how to mobilize people to make a difference, all of those things are now playing in full effect in the way that I'm doing and running my business. You know, I say all the time, like, I'm definitely not a businessman. I'm an activist who has learned business. And that comes out of my heart for being wanting to be a part of a movement and feeling called by God to do something that's bigger than myself and my organization.
So let's kind of start walking down that road a little bit of what you have created with Sackcloth and Ashes and kind of that movement piece of it. For every blanket that you sell, another one gets given to a homeless shelter in that person's area. So walk us through kind of where that idea started and then how have you been executing onto that?
Yeah, so I was already familiar with the one-for-one business model because Tom's had been around for about 8 years at that point. And I believe it was the same year or maybe even like a couple years after Blake sold 50% of Tom's to Bain. I feel like from that point on, just from an outsider's perspective, it felt like Tom's was losing relevancy a little bit. Mm-hmm. They've been around for a while. They had some, you know, massive changes that were happening in the company, and it didn't feel like the magic that it felt when Tom started. The pioneering days were over. And so I felt like if I was going to do the one-for-one model, I wanted to evolve it, and I wanted to make it local. So instead of buying a product and a second product sent overseas somewhere, I wanted to create a model where if you buy a product, we're going to send a product down the street from where you live. And give people an opportunity to make a difference in their local communities. And especially with the topic of homelessness, it was like, this isn't a problem that's like just happening overseas somewhere that we're trying to rally people to help. This is like happening on the way to work.
Yeah.
We're driving by people on the street. You know, this is right here in our own backyard. And nobody was talking about it except for in a negative way. Like, when I was in 2014, homelessness was not being talked about on the level it is being talked about right now. And in the last 5 years, this particular situation has evolved immensely to where now people are starting to band together and start doing things. But back in 2014, it was like the outcasts of society and they were kind of just being ignored. And then at the same time, Princeton did a study where when we drive by people on the street, we process them as objects. And so it was this fascinating thing. It was like, not only are these people not being noticed, anything that's said about them on the internet is just statistics or talking about it in a little bit of a negative light.
And right. So, we've lost the relationship to them.
Yeah. And just the connection of like understanding that these people are people. And so I just thought it was unique to like, well, if I'm going to evolve the one for one model and make it local, like what an issue to do it for an issue to just be in every single neighborhood and in city in America right now. And so yeah, that was kind of the overall concept. Like, I just want to empower people in all around the nation to make a difference in their local communities. We got to start channeling our focus to local. You know, it's interesting because the more you look into activism or making a difference, it's like activism doesn't happen out there. Activism happens right here. It happens in your own life. It happens in your own family. And it happens in your local community. You can't be a person that's dedicating your life to making a difference somewhere else without first making a difference right in your own life. And
yeah,
I think
Jesus
even said, you know, it's like, if you're not caring for your family, then don't be thinking about caring for anything else. Like, you need to be handling your own life and your own family, and then you can think about anything outside of that. And so I just evolved that into take care of yourself, take care of your family, take care of your community. And if you're doing all of that, then you can start talking about taking care of people outside of that. But right now, we have a responsibility to take care of the things that are in our lives right now down the street. So yeah. That was kind of where the model was formed, was empowering people and companies to do that locally.
So you start Sackcloth and Ashes. You start this one-for-one program. At the time, did you have any idea that it would be what it is today?
I think so. I don't think I would have done it if I didn't think I was going to grow it to where I had always envisioned. I don't know if I could have said it would look in certain ways that it looks right now, but I definitely would have let go of it and dropped it if I didn't think I could grow this to be something I could, you know, dedicate my life to for the next however many years and trying to stir something big.
So tell us what that pathway has been. You sold, you know, how many in 2014 to where you guys are today?
Yeah. So we started with, I realized I can't sew and hired a lady in my community named Tammy.
Who can sew?
Tammy could sew. She sewed really well. She was already sewing blankets and keeping them in her car to pass out to people on the street, and that was an easy first hire.
Oh, you're kidding me. That is awesome.
She told me that. I'm like, hired, Tammy. You're my first hire.
Oh.
Bring it in. Bring it in, Tammy. Bring it in.
No. God was already in that place.
Totally. So she was doing that, and so she'd make me blank. I mean, literally, we were buying like these big black rolls of fleece fabric from Joann's. Like, there wasn't anything special about the blankets. She would cut the fabric and then sew a border around them, and I'd put a little logo on them. And then I'd put like 30 blankets in my trunk, and I just started driving up and down the Oregon coast and walking into shops with boxes unannounced and just be like, hey, I started this blanket company, and here's why you should buy these blankets right now from me over the blankets on your shelf, because I'm going to drive down to your local homeless shelter and I'm going to donate all the blankets in my trunk. And got into 20 shops. And then my only business strategy after June 1st, 2014, when sackclothnashes.com went live, was I'm going to post on Instagram once a day. So I'm posting on Instagram once a day just because it was a fairly new platform that was in a massive growth stage. And Instagram emails me in November of 14, 5 months into business. And Instagram's like, we love your brand. We love what you're doing. We want to feature you on Instagram's Instagram.
Oh,
and at the time, and Instagram, it's funny because I didn't even know Instagram had an Instagram account, which was just so funny and weird to me. And I look it up and it had 42 million followers. And
That's a lot of blankets.
I remember calling my buddy Cody and just being like, hey man, like Instagram just emailed me and said they want to feature us on Instagram's Instagram. Like, I think that's a big deal. He's like, that's an incredibly big deal. Like, get back to them right now. And so I shoot him an email and I'm like, hey, how long do I have to prepare for this? This is amazing. They're like, we're posting about you tomorrow.
Oh no.
And it was the day before Black Friday. And so they post about us and our story goes out to 42 million people. And that was just basically our Kickstarter. You know, it was the thing that just gave us mass exposure. And it was the first massive form of belief that caused me to go, wow, I think this is going to work.
Yeah. I would think after having 42 million views on your organization and your Instagram would be a pretty good confirmation.
Yeah. So just capitalized on that and really just built the brand on social media for the first 4 years. And I would send blanket, like the thing about Instagram, what happened with that is instantly we got exposed to all the millennial travelers out there taking photos. And we were one of the first brands that were like sending our blankets to these photographers and saying, hey, for X amount of money, would you take like 10 photos and then promote them through your feed? So we were growing like 500 to 1,000 followers every day.
Wow, and that's so smart.
And so grew the brand on social media. 100% of our sales were going through our website. And like in 2017, I think we did like $1 million through Instagram alone. And 2018, we launched our first major campaign called Blanket the United States. And our goal with the campaign is to donate 1 million blankets to homeless shelters by 2024. That was really where we took a massive shift from like, we're a startup to now we're going to like put some deep roots in for the company. And within a week of launching the campaign, we got a deal done with Subaru in Oregon. They bought 2,500 blankets. And for every Subaru purchased, it comes with a blanket. And in doing so, we were able to donate 2,500 blankets to homeless shelters in Oregon. And then after that, a company bought 5,000 blankets. And then after that, Cost Plus World Market bought 15,000 blankets. So now we're blanketing Texas, Colorado, and Washington. So now we have all these companies around the United States wanting to participate in this campaign called Blanket the United States, where they can buy blankets for their customers or employees and make a difference in their entire local state.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you have companies blanketing entire states. And so we're going to hit this million blanket goal by partnering with people individually who buy a blanket from our website. We'll send a blanket to your local shelter. And we're going to do that by partnering with companies that want to give gifts to their employees or customers. Now they can buy blankets in bulk and distribute them and make a difference in their local communities. And so that to me was kind of like starting from the sewing machine, building it up through social media and gaining some credibility and a platform, and then pivoting into these massive company partnerships, these B2B partnerships. and now sky's the limit. Now it's a matter of exposure and bringing on the right brand partners to blanket the United States.
Yeah, I think the blanket the United States is such a fantastic model. And I would venture to guess, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong on this, but by partnering with these organizations and corporations, you're inviting them into being part of a solution, into being part of this idea of a movement. Tell us a little bit about just kind of how those interactions have been going and what have been kind of the main takeaways as you interact with, you know, whether it's the CEOs or purchasing departments of these organizations, but where the motivation is their idea of being part of something is really intriguing.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of people, what I'm realizing, a lot of people want to make a difference, but they just don't know how.
Mm-hmm.
With all these brand partnerships, I knew that there would come a point where it's time to put in the real work on a grassroots level. And I didn't want to just send blankets to local homeless shelters anymore. I want to go to the homeless shelters. I want to learn about their programs. I want to pass out blankets to them in person.
And you bring that CEOs with you, don't you?
Yeah. And that was kind of the cool thing that came out of it was I started doing these blanket drops at homeless shelters where we pass out blankets and get tours of these shelters and learn about these programs. But it was also a great way for us to invite executives of these companies that we're partnered with and celebrities into these processes.
So Bob, what would you say to someone who, you know, may just be kind of on that edge of an idea, or maybe it's fear, you know, that getting back to the poem that you mentioned in the beginning, what would you kind of say after all of this to someone who is just on that cusp of going, I've got an idea, I'm just needing kind of that next nudge?
I would say, number one, you got to stay true to yourself. You got to stay true to what you feel like you're supposed to do. There's not a better place to be in the world than doing what you feel like you're supposed to do. There's not a better place to be than knowing that you're in the place that God wants you to be. There's nothing else that can replace that feeling. And even though it might be hard or it requires extreme sacrifice, or there's a lot of questions of the unknown immediate future, there's not a better feeling that you're ever gonna feel than doing and being in the place that God wants you to be. And that's worth it.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
I think one of them that comes to mind is the number one goal in your life is to evolve, not strive for success. Success and failure are illusions. And as soon as you define what success is for you, you limit yourself. The goal in life is not to succeed, but to evolve. And evolving never has a cap to it. We are always, especially God's people, are always supposed to continue to evolve to be the best version of yourself. And I would say, don't limit yourself to pursuing all of whatever you would define success as. Change your focus from pursuing those things and chasing after whatever that is, and start focusing on evolving yourself and being the best person that you possibly can be for the people in your life.
I like that. Yeah, so often we don't, we also don't value failure, right?
Yeah, and many of the times, failure is just an illusion. It's however you define failure and success is like it immediately limits you. I had this vision when I was 19 years old. I feel like my testimony is not necessarily God saving me from my failures. It was God saving me from my successes. And I felt like as a young guy, I felt like everything I touched turned to gold. God had to remind me that this life isn't about constantly trying to succeed. And I had this moment where I had this vision that I was running on a track and I was beating everybody that I was racing against. I was winning. And all of a sudden a trophy appears in my hand. And this trophy represented like success and like achievement. And then all of a sudden I'm running and I'm still winning the race. And all of a sudden another trophy appears in my other hand. And then all of a sudden another trophy appears in my hand. And then another trophy appears in my arms. All of a sudden I'm carrying like 6-8 trophies. And all of a sudden these trophies are weighing me down to where I look to my sides and I'm getting passed by other people. And it wasn't until I set the trophies down on the side of the track that I was able to run at the best of my abilities again. When we start to collect all of these successes and get caught up in all of these things that we're accomplishing, those things weigh you down. Those are the things that are actually going to keep you from running the race at the best of your abilities. You have to be able to set them down in order to run at the best of your abilities. I heard this quote recently that is so good. It's like, get on your knees and start each day as if nothing had yet been done. That's the mentality that we have to have as Christ followers. And there's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of things we need to do. And we can't get caught up in all the things that we think we're achieving and succeeding in. Those things are distractions. And then one of the number one things people say to me is, Bob, congratulations on your success. And I look at them and I'm like, success? I'm just starting out. Like, I'm reaching a place that people might define as success. But in my mentality is, I have a lot to evolve in. There's a lot of work to be done. And as soon as I buy into that lie of success, I start to lose it. That's the thing that takes leaders out, is the concept of success and the thinking that you're better than yourself. And so God is not impressed with your successes, and he's not disappointed in your failures. God's love for you remains the same despite successes and failures. And until you understand that, you don't fully understand the gospel, and you don't understand the true love ahead of us.
I think that's so beautifully said. And there's, man, the freedom that comes from that, you know, just your image of running on the track with all of these trophies. And when you set them down, you're then free again. There's something really beautiful about that. Bob, what's next? As you think about, you know, it's interesting that you say about the successes, because the average startup typically fails. 1 in 10 statistically succeed. So you've beat those odds. But what's kind of ruminating in your head as far as, you know, you still kind of keep towards this goal of blanketing the U.S., but what are some other things that you are feeling like there's a movement towards that you want to be a part of?
When I'm doing blanket drops all around the United States, I'm constantly looking for solutions. And right now, the media is so filled with issues, and we're very quick to highlight the next shooting or the next hurricane or the next celebrity moral failure. And we're constantly looking for issues, and we're highlighting issues. And the problem with that is, the more issues that we focus on, the more issues we create. The more that we focus on solutions, the better society we create. So I'm traveling around the United States, and I'm on a plane almost every week at this point, looking and finding solutions of people that are doing incredible things on a grassroots level. One of the best solutions I've found to date is an organization in San Francisco in the Tenderloin called City Impact. And these people are doing such unbelievable work. And they've created the first child sponsorships program in the United States. So before, you could sponsor kids through Compassion or World Vision, kids that are overseas. City Impact is allowing you to sponsor kids right here in our local community, you know, right here in the United States. For $38 a month, you can sponsor a child in the Tenderloin and help fund their education. And I found out about this program. And when it comes to homelessness, it's so debated, and there's so many biases and judgments and skewed understandings and perspectives. When it comes to kids on the streets, there's absolutely no debate. Kids should not be on the streets. And because they're on the streets, 3 out of 10 kids end up with a mental illness because they're born into families that end up on the streets and experiencing massive trauma. City Impact is doing such unbelievable work in the Tenderloin, which is basically like the Skid Row of San Francisco. And that's the stuff that fires me up. Those are the people that we should be putting on in the media. And because we're not doing that, it's our responsibility as CEOs, as leaders, as civilians, to start promoting people and organizations like that that are doing good work in our local communities. If you don't know where to start in your community, if you're like, I want to make a difference, but I just don't know how or where to begin, find somebody in your community that is already making a difference and join them. And City Impact is the thing that gets me fired up. So on November 1st of 2019, I'm going to become the first ambassador for San Francisco City Impact Child Sponsorships Program. And when you sponsor a child, we're going to send you a free sackcloth and ashes blanket. This is an opportunity for me to get involved in a way that is something I truly believe in. It's a way for me to use my platform to highlight a solution. And it's something that I hope is just the early stages of what's being created in that realm. I just think that that's revolutionary to start this kind of a program. They need support. They're a stone's throw away from Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I mean, no, if you've been in that area, you can't, it's hard to kind of take in the juxtaposition of where they're at versus where, you know, Salesforce is down the street. I mean, it's tough.
Yeah, for sure. And so that's it. When you say what's next, it's like, those are the things that come to mind. It's like, how can I support, bring awareness to organizations and people that are doing good work in our local communities? Sackcloth and ashes, the blankets are simply just a bridge that is connecting me with really great companies that have massive platforms and celebrities and the people in the organizations that are showing up every day doing grassroots work. The blankets and sackcloth are a bridge between people with resources and platforms and the people that are doing incredible work in our communities. The blankets are what I'm coining as a term, the third party object that is creating an opportunity for me to engage with pretty much anybody. And blankets being a universal product and a universal gift, it's made it easier. It's easier to do with blankets than it would be with shoes or backpacks or something.
Well, and I will say this, they are beautiful blankets. So for everybody listening, go check out sackclothandashes.com. You will see some incredible photography and beautiful workmanship of blankets from fabrics from around the world. So Bob, I hope this is the first of many times we get to talk like this.
Yeah, same. It's always a privilege to be able to talk to people that are excited to highlight local work, local communities, and what's happening around the United States. And you guys have been such a leader of that.
Well, I have a feeling that there's going to be a lot more in your future of the way that God's going to open doors. So thanks so much for the work you're doing. And thank you for inspiring us all today.
Thank you for having me.
Was such a good conversation. To stay in touch with the latest content, just remember to subscribe. That is the best and easiest way to stay in touch with the City Gospel Movement's content. And Kaden?
Yes, and please, if you want to keep this conversation going, DM us on Instagram at City Gospel Movements.
We love hearing from you.
Thank you for listening to the City Gospel Movements podcast, where we celebrate and accelerate collaborative gospel work in cities around the world. For more resources, show notes, and to get connected to gospel movements around the globe, visit citygospelmovements.org. That's citygospelmovements.org. Keep believing in what God can do in your city.